Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had a thrilling and interesting and intellectually stimulating and thought-provoking week. Yes, indeed, at Neil Turner, adjusting the cravat. I was adjusting the cravat. That is what I was doing. That is exactly.
Is that what they call it these days, Ed?
That's what they call it these days. Paul, yes. Okay, so anyway, cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Lucy. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Tommy. Cheers, Delta Roscoe.
Lachaim.
Cheers, Lachaim. Hurgen Gerligan.
Nazrovia. Nazrovia, even.
Nazrovia, K. Piss, Salu, Saludo.
Yakidar.
Proust.
Scrubianan.
Turve Sexy. Slangervar. And welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, on my public house. We meet on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We discuss based science and stuff that's increasingly what's going on in the world, all kinds of stuff, and we're stuff that is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. Hello, John Bidston. Bloody hell. Bloody hell. Bloody hell. That's a good old English term there. Yes, Capis. Skål. I think I forgot to say skål. Skål to all our Scandinavian viewers. And welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Now, we have a very special guest for you today, and that is Miss Lucy White. So I would ask Lucy to say hello.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. It's great to be in your company. And yeah, we're going to be discussing all things crazy in the week of British politics. I mean, I think every single day is ludicrous, and yet it just keeps getting more and more insane every day.
Yes, and Lucy, you may recall, was interviewed on this channel a few months ago because she catapulted to prominence for saying that the speaker of the deputy speaker of the House of Parliament, Nuz Ghani or something, who's also wearing men's clothes, shouldn't be the speaker for reasons that we can't talk about on here. So, that's Lucy. Lipton, what are you doing, Lipton? Lipton.
Is eating KFC.
Lipton is eating Kentucky Fried Chicken at the moment.
Because which is a racial stereotype. Shame on you, Lipton.
We confound racial stereotypes here at the Jolly Heretic. We absolutely confound them. So hello, Lipton. So I'm going to start with Lucy. Now, Lucy was saying that she didn't... We've had a big march at the weekend, chaps. Just to those in America that might not be familiar with this, there was a Unite Britain march. And there was about, 60 to 80,000 people there, something like that. And Keir Starmer was very upset about this. And he actually said that the people on that march are the enemies of Britain, that he's going to fight them with everything he can fight them with. They're going to suffer the full force of the law. There was obviously all kinds of facial recognition camera trickery going on. And people were arrested, and I can only assume that he's rather frightened of it, and that's why he reacted in that kind of way he did. Where he said, "Let me see if I can come up with what he actually said, word for word." But he basically said he wasn't happy about this, and he was against it, and he banned about seven people from coming from abroad to the march, including a Polish member of parliament or something. He was considered persona non grata. Now, Lucy is one of those interesting people. She doesn't turn up to the battle, but she goes to the post-battle drinks. And so can you tell us a bit about, Lucy, your observations of this march?
Yes, well, I think the march in itself is a great idea, but I think my issue is, they promote this idea that anyone can become British, and therefore if anyone is British, everyone is welcome. I have a bit of a different view to the country, and so I wouldn't attend on that reason to support the march, but I'm happy to go to meet my friends at the pub afterwards.
Oh, is that right? So actually this march is a bit of a load of old nonsense then, but surely it drew in all kinds, it drew in, as it were, if the march is the Edinburgh Festival, then it drew in an Edinburgh Fringe Festival of people that have slightly more based views on things, did it not?
Yeah, definitely. There were lots of based people around the outskirts of the march. And certainly I saw some of my friends who are very based at the march. I just personally didn't go. I also think, it's a lot of people. It's quite chaotic, which is great. I don't have a problem with that. I just think, supporting something where anyone can become British is just against my beliefs, so I didn't personally go, but I respect those that did go.
But can't like it can't Frank Bruno, can't he become British?
You can't become British. British is also in your DNA, isn't it? So...
Yeah, but Lucy, who said they can become, isn't it, they can become British citizens, which isn't necessarily the same as being ethnically British or ethnically English, for example.
That is true. But again, if anyone can become British and live in Britain, you see the slow demographic replacement of our people.
You've just conflated it again. You've just said they can live, they can get British citizenship and be British. They're not necessarily the same thing.
So it's different to be British and to have a British citizenship.
Well, for example, I could get an Irish passport. I qualify, but I wouldn't suddenly be Irish. I could go and live in America. I've had the chance to get a green card in America. I wouldn't suddenly become American. I'd be maybe even become an American citizen the way things are going, but I still wouldn't be fully American.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, that's just my views on the march. I think it's a great idea. I think Tommy has, you know, he's got this great ability to actually bring people together. And I like the sort of idea. I think Tommy Robinson did a tweet was, Keir Starmer, you're going to be taken down by a football hooligan from Luton. So I think that was quite a good way to summarise the march. You can just sense the anger that people have. And again, I've watched a number of the videos from the march, and it's interesting how everyone has to sort of give a statement and then back it up by saying, oh, but I'm not a racist. You know, we need to drop this narrative. You can just say what you wish to say without having to justify the fact that, oh, but I'm not a racist.
What if you are a racist?
People just are afraid. Well, again, Rupert Lowe, using his words, you would just say, well, I don't care what you have to think say about me.
That's true. But I think I've got a slightly more liberal view on this, which may upset some of my viewers. But I think that, yeah, you can't become British. You can't become British. But I can see the argument that you can adopt someone. Like my dog when I was a kid, Chipper, he wasn't related to us. He wasn't part of our family because in the genetic sense, because he was a dog. But he was, we had a common ancestor like 80 million years ago in the form of a vole. But he was our family. He was like adopted into our family. And I'm just wondering, can you do that with certain based ethnic minorities that you like? Can you say, yeah, they're honorary English. We don't mind them. They're all right. They can stay.
Is this a question to me?
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think the issue is when the country was 95% white British, it wasn't an issue. But now that it's about 25% non-white British, it's become a problem. So if every single household were to adopt one of these, it multiplies. But again, I think over time, we've just seen such a rapid change. You know, when I was at school in the 1990s, well, that's when I was born. But, you know, when I was very young, when in primary school, this was never an issue, but you look around now and I think it's the pace of it is.
Yeah, because our panel is 25% white English, and it's functioning okay, but that's mainly because Lipton isn't saying anything. So is that how it works? That as long as they don't say anything, it could be. What do you think, Lipton?
No, sorry. I was about to say that the issue is the lack of assimilation. So some groups, they do not identify as British, neither do they identify as American. Britain's culture has been diluted due to multiculturalism. If all cultures have equal value and equal worth, there's no shared identity. And therefore, we can no longer discuss the concept of Britishness because it cannot exist in a multicultural society. So I could migrate to the UK. I assimilate into British culture. I like England. I like the heritage of England. I like empire. But I am an anomalous case. Most people don't share my views. And these days, they're not being encouraged by the establishment to assimilate. So that's really the root of the problem. And that's why I tend to agree with some of Lucy's arguments. So 50 years ago, when Jamaica was a colony, British people would accept them as part of the empire, and some Jamaicans consider themselves to be a part of the empire. But in 2026, assimilation has become a dirty word. So many of these immigrants, they will never identify as British. They will when it suits them politically. So if you're British, you don't need a visa to travel. So when they can exploit the political benefits, they will identify as British. But in a one-to-one situation, they're not British. They don't care about the aristocracy. Many people are celebrating the decline of the hereditary peers. That's not something I endorse either. I like the aristocracy.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, you don't do it. You don't integrate. I've lived in this country for 21 years, and almost all my friends are non-Finnish. Not necessarily British, but most of them are British, actually. We have a little group called Brits in Oulu that we up every so often, and we go to a Nepalese restaurant. It has a kind of colonial feel. It's good. But we're mostly British with a New Zealander and an Asian New Zealander and whatever. But it's very, very few Finns, it doesn't work like that. You naturally stick with your own kind, and you basically meet up and moan about Finns and how annoying Finns are. That's what you do as an expat. And I bet in America, not that I've ever lived there, I wouldn't be at all surprised if I moved there, I find other British people or other non-Americans, and we meet up and moan about Americans.
No, I disagree. It doesn't work like that. It can work like that because you're uniquely misanthropic and cliquey, so you hang out. But there's two things I'd say. One is we keep conflating British and English, and they're not the same, so that's a bit frustrating. Britishness is a construct itself. It's the unified sense of identity of three or four different nationalities. So I don't have any problem with people being British who aren't actually originally from the British Isles. If, for example, I've never had any problem with Indian people because a lot of them went to English schools, value English things. I had Indian students who knew Shakespeare better than most English people. So not all foreigners are the same. If you've had an empire and you have people from that empire who've been inculcated with certain constructed values from the British Empire, that's not the same as people coming from radically different cultures who don't want to assimilate in the slightest. And then you've got the extra issue. There's English ethno-nationalism, there's Welsh nationalism, Scottish nationalism, there's Irish. All of these things are uniquely ethnic, whereas Britishness isn't. Britishness is an agglomeration.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, I felt perfect when I was in Scotland. I felt more when I was at university there. I felt more English.
Yeah,
and I made a point of trying to find other English people, and there weren't many. And we would
become
friends.
You just look
for
the people who don't have rickets.
Well, yeah, exactly. The people that can read, and we people that weren't morbidly obese. And we would find each other, the people that weren't either on skag or paedophilia.
Like mastodons across the primeval swamp,
bellowing to each other.
Just
look for paedophiles that weren't taking crack, and then was like, "Oh, non-paedophiles." I mean, and then that's an English person. Sorry, no offense to my friends in Aberdeen. The same in the Netherlands. The same in the Netherlands when I was at university there. All my friends were, apart from the people I was doing field work with, were non-Dutch. And most international people that I knew in the Netherlands, nobody spoke Dutch. I was the only person that spoke Dutch. It was just a separate thing. So you can't really get it. I think, Lucy, you're never, ever, ever going to get full integration. Even these minorities that you say, oh, they're integrated, they're a wonderful minority, they still keep their little annoying quirks.
Oh, definitely. Like
if they're East Asian, they say, oh, you've got to take your shoes off in the house. I hate taking my shoes off in the house.
Is that because you've got bunions that are hideous?
No, it's just because I'm a bit of a cripple, as you know, of a cerebral palsy, and there's no chair for me to sit on to take them off. So I have to sort of hop.
Suppose you want special treatments. This is typical.
I always thought as a kid that the kind of people that ask you to take your shoes off when you go into the house are the same kind of people. I'm thinking pot pourri in the bathroom.
But Ed, do you think they may? You might have been the only person they asked to take the shoes off because they were cruel and sadistic.
Sorry,
I think to your point that, you know, saying the Indians integrate, well, I disagree entirely. Like, number one, try telling that to Henry Nowak's family. This guy has a knife, I think it's called the Kirpan, that the Sikhs carry around. And how is that acceptable? I think Charlie Bentley Aston, I think that's her name, she made a good point that at Wembley, you can't take a bottle of water into the stadium, yet the Sikhs can bring in their religious knife, and the fact that they all live in their own sub-communities, you know. So I'm just English, British. I don't have a second subculture. Whereas they will always claim to be English, yet they will have, you know, an Indian wedding ceremony, and they live among their own, and they have their own religious X, Y, and Z. So they're definitely not us. They try to pretend to be us because we're so amazing. And everyone seems to want to pretend to be English or British. But the point of it is they will never assimilate, and they have their own country and their own culture. I don't see any reason for them to be here.
It's like Quakers, though, isn't it? It's like Quakers or Methodists or sorry, Lips, you were going to say something to Lucy.
No, I was about to say, Lucy, England is no longer a liberal country in the classical liberal sense, but as a nominally liberal country, the rights of immigrants are respected. They have a right to cultural expression, and I agree with that point. My issue, however, is when natives are forced to conform to their culture. That's an issue, and we don't discuss it enough. So if Muslims don't like music or certain works of art, that's not the problem of children in British schools.
That's true. Lucy
made another point. I like their food, but beyond their food, I can't tell you what is it that they are offering.
They are offering food, though. I would say that about Sikhs. If you're ever staying in some crap place like Birmingham or Leicester or something, and you stay at one of those hotels, those bastard hotels that don't include breakfast in the price, and you have to pay extra, don't like a travel lodge or a Holiday Inn, right? Don't pay extra for the breakfast. Just go to your local gurdwara, and they will give you free food. If you want to, go there three times a day. And they will give you free food. So that is the one thing they offer is food.
Also,
with their hands, are you going to get food poisoning?
Ed, could I quickly make the point that also I think Lucy's cherry picked. There's one tragic example, but if you look, I'm a great believer in, you know, actually diving down into statistics, and it annoys me on the left when people pretend they don't know what per capita means anymore. But equally, people on the right shouldn't cherry pick. And that's one instance. I think if you looked at the per capita commitment of violent crime, something tells me Sikhs won't be top of the league.
But they are, the Indians in general, apart from the British, they're the next largest ethnic group in Britain. So per capita of the foreign populations here, the Indians are the largest. Hence, they're contributing to our demographic replacement the most. So the Indians, more than any other group.
Well, more than the Pakistanis. Really?
There's more Indians than Pakistanis here, definitely.
But surely their fertility rate is lower.
I'm just sort of looking it up now as we're chatting. It seems that there's 1.8 million Indians here. Pakistanis, I think it's less. Pakistanis 1.6 million, Indians 1.8 million, according to my quick research. But
what's the rate of growth? I suspect that the Pakistani community has been growing at a faster rate than the Indian, which has been more stable.
But they're being imported way more. So if you look at data...
It doesn't really matter how they're getting it. Well, it does. But in terms of just absolute increase in numbers, I'm suggesting there's a bigger increase in proportion of people from the Islamic world than the Indian subcontinent.
Yeah, is that...
But the one by immigration, if you look at immigration over the last 5 to 6 years, the number one country sending immigrants here is India, but by far, like, it's incomparable to any other country coming over.
Yeah, and so, but it's interesting. So there's a big influx of Indian immigrants into America, but there's secondary questions: what percentage of those people stay, put down roots, and never go back home to India?
None of them want to go back home.
Some of them do go back home, because I know of many cases of people that came here when they were kids or whatever, even from the Caribbean, and then on their British pension, they can live like kings in Trinidad or whatever, right? So they have a British pension and they go and they retire to Trinidad or somewhere. So they do go back. Some of them do go back home. But Paul, I think I'm right in saying the fertility rate, I think from memory, the fertility rate of Hindus in the UK is a bit higher than the English, but not much higher.
But also, that wasn't my point about per capita crime. What's the proportion of Indians versus Pakistanis, for example, committing crime?
Oh,
violent crime.
Yeah, I have seen data on that. Yeah. I don't have the memory. I don't know off by heart, but I know it's much higher among the Pakistani communities. It's significantly higher.
Right. Well, there's an immediate thing. So you've got to dive into the statistics for the more, you know, interesting thing.
The more, I mean, that's the difference. But then I suppose on the other hand, I don't, it just doesn't get to you, does it? I mean, Lucy, I was in Oulu car park the other day, at the car park of the Lidl a few weeks ago. And I've never seen anything like it. It was a Muslim woman that was completely covered. Like not even her eyes were covered. I've never seen it before, ever. Even her eyes. And then I naturally took a photograph of it, as I've discussed on here, and then her husband got very upset.
Oh, yeah, I did see this. I saw
that too. About
this. And you said it's started, a public place.
I kept saying, you'll say on Yulkin and Paika, say on Yulkin and Paika, which he understood. To be fair, his Finnish was actually quite good. Not quite good, it was all right. And I went into English because I thought like maybe his English was better, but then no, he wanted to speak in Finnish. So I respected that. I did respect that he had learnt Finnish. But if you're going to integrate into Finland, Finnish women don't dress like that. Finnish don't necessarily dress how Finnish women dress. I mean, like have some style, but don't go for it. And that's another thing. It's the cultural thing. There's something unnatural and weird about it. That's what I don't like.
My turn to speak, Ed.
Yes, Lipton.
My turn to speak.
Mm.
Ed, Europeans were colonizers. Colonization is not peculiar to Europe. But what people do not say about European colonization is that when Europeans went to different countries, when they went to Africa, when they went to India, Europeans built intellectual societies to revive indigenous literature and indigenous artwork. Whereas many of these immigrants who are coming to the West today, they are anti-Western culture and traditions. So if we're being objective and practical, when people from the West flow to other countries, they make them better off in a cultural context. They are usually the people who are documenting the literature of these countries. They are the ones who are sponsoring the archaeological expeditions, but we don't discuss these issues. And I think that they are important because the argument is always that white people are racist. They committed cultural genocide, and that's not the truth. They revived cultural literature, especially in India.
And also, yeah, in India, they didn't, as I understand it, they had texts which the Indians couldn't even understand.
Yeah, Ashoka, the Indian king, he was his work was revived because of Europeans.
Right, exactly. So we do cool things like we go to Crete and we dig up Knossos, which they just have just lying about doing nothing. So we do good stuff. When they say, "Oh well, we take their resources," no, we don't. We barter with them for their resources.
I've done a lot of work in Africa, just to name some of the countries. You know, Democratic Republic of Congo, I was there last year. Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa. So of those countries, they are all being colonized right now, but by China, and people don't talk about that enough. People are happy that have never been to Africa and don't know how Africa works. They're happy to talk about colonization as if it were a past experience, and it's like, actually no, it's happening right now. Neocolonialism is happening right now with the Chinese. But instead, I know you already know this, Ed, but just to for our lovely audience, in case they don't know or haven't been to Congo, the Chinese will come and they will make deals with the government, but they will do that and place their sort of, the Chinese will seize their international airports or ports or other forms of transportation to give them loans. So they will say, we'll give you this loan for X hundreds of millions in exchange. You know, we're going to be owning your airport until you pay us back. And the debt, they essentially put African nations into a debt trap. You've seen it all over Africa. And the Chinese will typically send their own Chinese workers out there. So they're not even employing the locals. They're not there to... So essentially... The British are currently doing some projects in Africa, soft power, we call it, so education, soft power. But the Chinese are hard power, building infrastructure. But those infrastructure projects are typically very poorly made. So they might build a road that will last 2 years, it's not built to last. And then that's how the African nations get increasingly into this debt trap cycle. Yeah. So blame China.
That's fascinating. Well, I didn't know that. Yes.
Well, may I go ahead?
Yes, you may.
Well, I have written on this topic before, the issue of Chinese neocolonialism in Africa. I have interviewed important academics on this issue. I've read many papers, and what I will say is that China's investments in Africa, one, are exaggerated, two, many of them are not profitable, and my final point is that the fiscal deficits in Africa are primarily attributed to inefficiencies in African governments. It's not that the Chinese are bringing Africans into a fiscal hole. China enters into agreement with African countries suffering from the low capacity problem, that the bureaucracies are not effective. People don't know how to manage infrastructure effectively. So there's a technology transfer problem. So technology flows from China to Africa, and Africans don't know how to manage it. They lack know-how. So I wouldn't say that Africa is falling into a trap because of the Chinese. That's not the issue. Africa is badly managed. Even the issue pertaining to the land grab, many of the people who are buying land in Africa are part of the corrupt elite. So that's another story. The African land grab is really about African bureaucrats.
That was insane. You have a country that 25 years ago, Zimbabwe, let's say 40 years ago, was one of the wealthiest countries in Africa. It was the breadbasket of Africa. And then he just takes away the land from people that farm the land and know how to farm the land, and just gives it to people that don't know how to farm and don't even care about farming. They just want to have some land. And then there's no food produced. And then you get hyperinflation. And the whole country goes completely mad. So, I mean, it's crazy what they do in Zimbabwe. At least with the Congo, as I understand it, they're selling land to Zimbabwean farmers and people like that know how to farm the land and farm the land. It's absolutely crazy. Paul, do you know much about agriculture?
Nothing.
No, I mean, neither really.
Well, the main issue of sort of the international global supply chains is that Africa exports raw materials, raw goods. So it will export coffee beans or cocoa beans, as opposed to the final value-added product of coffee or chocolate. Or it will export cotton, say, from the Ivory Coast, but it won't export the T-shirts that you need, the final product. So I think, you know, Africa will always be, as long as it has an agrarian primary economy, it will be stuck in that stage until it's able to enter its manufacturing era, if you like to call it that. So Africa basically needs to focus on building factories, which is some of the work I was looking at in Congo. You know, instead of exporting cobalt, you add value to it and refine it in the continent. And until Africa manufactures and exports value-added products, it will remain a nation of poverty. So I don't believe in foreign aid, but I do believe in investing in factories and manufacturing, as I say, to go from value-added to from raw goods to value-added goods.
Yes. Yes.
It's just like cement in Nigeria. In the cement industry in Nigeria, it has minted a few successful people, but Nigerians are still relying on technology from foreign countries. And by relying, I literally mean that they import technology and they don't know how to use it. So they can't add value. They don't move up the value chain. And that's their fault. That's not really China's fault. The Chinese have tried.
Yeah, they need to sort their lives out. I've not been to sub-Saharan Africa, but I know people that have, and they haven't had positive comments about it, really. Well, no, I know one person that did, but they went to Kenya, but they didn't actually leave the hotel resort. They just went airport, bus, hotel resort. You stay there all the time and eat and sunbathe and swim, and then go back to the airport. That was good. That they enjoyed.
But I don't know if I shared this joke before, but in Africa, notes are usually defaced because of witchcraft. So people think that the money is evil, and as a result, they destroy it. So that's the leading cause in Africa.
I heard a case about a guy in Congo, a British guy in Congo, and he had some, I don't know, he was controlling some mine or whatever. And there were these local people that kept coming and illegally digging in the area. And he told them that he was going to use white man magic on them if they didn't behave themselves. And then to prove his point, he went to a shop and got one of those miniature skulls that you can get to put in a fish tank. And he left those skulls lying about to convey to them that this is what white man magic can do. And consequently, he was arrested and jailed for witchcraft.
Oh, wow.
It is actually a crime in that part of the Congo. And it was very serious thing. So that's what we're dealing with. It's like England in the 17th century level of thinking.
Exactly. So, and that's sort of why I'd say, you know, those coming from those cultures in Africa to the UK, it's very hard for them to assimilate. In fact, it's impossible. And I have nothing against those people. As I say, I've been to Africa. I've spent some central time there. And it's just that there is a mismatch between our way of life and their way of life. And instead of us having this white guilt over Africa, I think it's time for us to accept that, you know, that they've had independence since the 1960s. They wanted independence. It's been over 60 years that they've had independence. They should be able to control their future without relying or needing foreign aid. Mm. And in fact, the migration crisis. So what a lot of people don't understand is, in my opinion, there isn't a need for any African refugees to be coming to Europe, because you have Kenya, which in Nairobi, there is a United Nations headquarter literally in Kenya. Kenya is a middle-income country, perfectly capable of looking after people. Even in Uganda, there's a refugee camp called Rhino Camp, which has a large capacity of over 1.3 million refugees. And so if you look at Sudan, for example, we're getting a lot of Sudanese migrants coming into Europe, but they are much closer to, say, Kenya and Uganda. So Africa just needs to organize itself better. You have the United Nations headquarters in Kenya, the African Union in Ethiopia, among those two countries. They can absolutely, you know, if there are genuine refugees, they should be kept in a safe environment in, say, Kenya, Uganda, maybe even Tanzania. But there's no need for them to come to Europe. And the fact that they do is why I would always argue they are illegal migrants who are opportunists. Opportunists? Yeah. Come for their own better way of life, not to flee war, because if they were fleeing war, they would go to the nearest safe country, which is very like Kenya. And that's why I always say this argument. People don't understand this because they are naive to how Africa works.
But isn't it the solution is relatively easy in the sense that I understand there's no will to implement it, but the actual technical solution is quite easy. I saw a really interesting, they're doing vox pops on the street, and normally they're a waste of time. And one guy said, though, the international free travel of workers is brilliant. The international free travel of people who don't work is disastrous. And I think it's a really useful distinction. If you've got proper immigration policies with proper skills requirements, most of this discussion, it doesn't need to take place.
Yeah. Also, we wouldn't even need people with these skills if we didn't have half of people going to university, which is a complete waste of time now. And they should just get themselves a trade.
Yeah, but I'm just pointing out, in a modern global, if you want to be a modern, successful global economy, I don't see any problem with the free travel of skilled workers. You're cutting your nose off to spite your face if you say, you know, only certain people are allowed to work in a certain country.
But equally, those skilled people should be adding to their home. So if all the, let's take Kenya. If all the talented Kenyans come to the UK, they're now leaving Kenya, which is a brain drain situation, and I would always argue, well, those talented people should be in Kenya. Kenya is actually the sort of the innovative hub of Africa in terms of M-Pesa, mobile money, digital technology. It's very advanced. All of their, you know, mobile money, Airtel. There's lots of big tech companies in Kenya. And it's like, well, if they all leave and come to, say, the US or the UK, well, then Kenya's just going to remain in a situation of stagnation. And that's why I think that skilled migrants should stay there. Because why should we take them from...
Yeah. Lucy, Kenya is one of the few African countries that's serious about R&D. I've read their innovation policies. Kenya has invested massively in R&D based on its level of development.
Well, there's also, yeah, but again,
affecting Kenya.
You look at the recent example of Polish immigration. Poles came in a massive wave and actually are now net going back to Poland, and Poland's GDP is increasing quicker than the UK's. So the idea that immigration is only ever one way, I just don't think is true.
Well, it's not saying it's one way, but yeah.
The point Lucy just made was people, we take skilled workers, and the implication is they never go back. Are you having a stroke, Ed?
I think it's your microphone.
A bit of technical problem when you talk, Paul.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
No,
what,
it's
what,
not a mental
that
problem.
That is you. It's you. That is not when Lucy talks. When Lucy talks, it's just a beautiful sound, albeit an Essex accent, with a posh accent overlaid. But when you talk, it's a strange noise. I don't know what's going on. I have to sort it out. Now you're silent, so I can't hear you. But everyone, put their microphones back on.
Yeah.
Right. Lucy's talking. Fine. Paul.
Is that any better now?
No, it's the same weird noise. That's just quieter. You've just put it quieter. There's some kind of weird glitch. Never mind. Okay, but yes, this is true. I mean, we've only had one Kenyan on the Jolly Heretic, and she was quite intelligent, wasn't she, Lipton?
Wanjiru.
Yeah, she was quite. She came on, and then the Queen died. I don't know if the two things were connected. We started. Turn it up.
The friendly ghost.
Yeah, Casper, the friendly ghost. Yeah,
of Keir Hamsterhammer.
Okay.
I'm curious. Where did this come from?
Sorry, Paul.
Is it any better now?
It's really quiet now.
All right, I'll try and sort it out.
Never mind. But really quiet.
This is that witchcraft we were talking about. You know,
I think it is. I think it is. I think that man.
Is that any better?
That's great. Well done. There was a documentary about it, and I think it might have been called "Banged Up Abroad," and the magistrate that could deal with it was on holiday or something, so he had to rot in this appalling Congolese jail, not even somewhere particularly developed in the Congo, for a couple of weeks before this magistrate could come back and release him and argue that no, witchcraft is not illegal and you can you're okay. And that was simply because he made this rather patronizing joke about white man magic and then provided evidence.
Let me give a joke, Ed.
Yes,
the Oba of Benin said that he was going to stop the trafficking of women by placing a curse on human traffickers. And people in the West, they took him seriously.
Anyway, Ed, now my sound's working. Could we return to the whole Polish example?
I think that's a very good example, that. Yeah, the intelligence predicts migration. Intelligent Polish people come over. They make a lot of money, send a lot of money home. They do undermine local wages, that can't be denied. And then they've all gone back, and this is Poland is now, according to a study I did a year ago or so, it's looking like it will overtake Britain. It will be richer than Britain before long as a country. So that's how well it's doing. And it's, by the way, not multicultural. If they have immigration, it actually genuinely is skilled immigration.
It's also, I'm not saying that we should take, so I agree with Lucy about skilled, for example, the NHS has overwhelmingly depended upon areas of the developing world to take doctors and nurses, that we really shouldn't, because for whatever reason, this country is structurally unwilling to train enough of our own doctors. And it's weird, because actually newly qualified doctors, junior doctors, are struggling to get jobs in UK hospitals, which is truly bizarre, given all that's been spent on their training. But there's dysfunctionality to the NHS that seems to feed this constant recruitment of foreign doctors. But in other areas, I can think of, you know, I don't see any a priori reason why you don't take skilled workers, because apart from anything else, if you're only taking skilled workers and you're doing it strategically and sensibly, you don't have problems of massive influxes of people, because there just aren't that number of that many skilled people. You know, the clue is in the word skilled. So we've created this nightmare scenario of mass uncontrolled immigration, but then we seem to just, I think it's wrong to respond by saying, so you need to actually get rid of all immigration. Why don't you just do it sensibly? We've done it atrociously for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
The issue is chain migration. So like one skilled worker might bring their family, who will then somehow be able to bring in other family members.
Yeah, but Lucy, they don't have to. Yeah, that's true, because we've got ridiculous rules about...
Exactly. We need to stop chain migration.
Yeah, there's all these types. When you dig down into the nuance of it, there are lots of things we could do that are sensible and not particularly difficult, but I just don't think the political will, for some bizarre reason, just isn't there.
Well, let's go on to this in the second half, but the feeling I get as a person that lives, obviously all three of you live in the UK, and the Lipton illegally, and the feeling I get as a person abroad is for, it's been above 21 years, is that the people feel that in the UK that everything's just hopeless. It's like towards the end of communism in Albania or something. If you read Theodore Dalrymple's book on he was in the Eastern Europe as communism collapsed, and there's just this general feeling of just this just hopeless despair. They know living standards have fallen. Like, randomly today, what came up on YouTube, it randomly came up, was the 10 o'clock news on the 2nd of May 1997, which was basically the last time England was sensible. And I thought to myself, good God, back then, my parents thought nothing of having fillet steak and chips every single Saturday for dinner, and they even bought an extra bit of fillet steak for the dog. Right, they thought nothing of that, and now the cost of steak in Tesco is what it should be in a restaurant, and the cost in a restaurant is like 30 quid or something for a steak and chip. It's insane. Yeah. And then the same people that are paying that for food, nobody can afford to buy a house. It's insane. Paul, what were you saying? In 98, you bought your house for 2 times salary.
I think it was 2.5. Just, but it's interesting. There are people in the comments saying this whole thing about skilled labour is nonsense. You, Ed, are living proof. You live and work in Finland. I've lived and worked in America. One of the consequences, if you have a completely pull up the drawbridge, why would any country take any skilled worker from the UK? And the idea that skilled workers from the UK don't want to go elsewhere in the world to advance their career and then come back to the UK. It strikes me as strange, but you really are going to create an island in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's what Lipton. What's that guy's name that wrote Beyondism?
The what?
Raymond Cattell. That's his name.
Raymond Cattell. Oh yes.
And that's what he argued. He argued that if a society is too open, it balkanizes, and we are seeing that happening, of course, in the UK. But if a society is too closed, it stagnates. And like North Korea or somewhere like that, and there's probably some
Scotland,
Scotland. Well, that's not exactly like a society.
Though, it's a one-party state.
Well, it's a one-party state. Yeah, and
rickets is common,
and that has interesting implications. The fact that it's a one-party state. Anyway, I'm going to go into the middle bit now. So we're about halfway through. So those of you who are new, hello, 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 and welcome to
the
Jolly
Heritage. We must do another toast.
We will do. Yes. And there's a poem about you, Lucy. Anyway, for those of you that are new, hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, online public house. We meet on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We discuss based science, stuff in the news, and stuff that is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. If you are new, would you do me a favour? Would you please, please, please subscribe? Would you subscribe on YouTube and hit the like button and hit the bell button and leave a comment for the algorithm and share the video and all that kind of malarkey? And would you subscribe to my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based stuff I can put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, blogs, films I make. There's a new one about Stanford. And if you like what I do, you can support me for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Dr. Paul Taylor, who goes under the moniker of Keir Hamster Palmer. And he has a very interesting channel called Readers of the Lost Art, where he takes a wry and grumpy look at literature that is at least 100 years old. This is sort of a guarantee of quality, I suppose. So good, literature that's good, like Three Men and a Boat.
Or The Odyssey. Well, I'm doing The Odyssey in depth before. It doesn't look good, but Christopher Nolan's ruined it with his blockbuster film coming out.
And one day, Paul and I are going to do Genesis, but it's always in the future, that project.
Yeah.
But probably never happen. Anyway, Paul's, you can see a link in the description to Paul's channel. Then below Paul, well, he's disappeared at the moment, but we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. And so, are you there, Lipton? No, he's getting some more Kentucky Fried Chicken.
He's fallen into the bucket.
Hello, Lipton. And so please subscribe to Lipton's channel. That's Lipton Matthews. And he also writes lots of interesting articles for all kinds of places. You'll just Google him, you'll find them. And then finally, we have Miss Lucy White. Lucy, you don't have a YouTube channel, do you, Lucy?
No, but I do have a lot of collection of videos from, you know, before I was cancelled from the mainstream media, when I used to go on TV. So maybe I should collate all those one day and start a YouTube channel. But as for now, just Twitter.
So follow Lucy White on Twitter at Lucy J White, or possibly Jane White. I can't remember off the top of my head.
J-A-Y-N-E. Lucy, or if you just type Lucy White, it should come up, I think. There might be some other Lucy Whites who definitely aren't me, but there's been a few interesting ones.
I think I'd seen a few of those.
Yeah.
Other Lucy Whites.
Yeah, when you've gone on OnlyFans then.
Exactly.
No, I've met a Lucy Brown.
I know Lucy Brown, yeah, she's great.
The jokes just write themselves. I'm opting out at this point.
It's a different colour. I don't think I've met a Lucy Black.
Well, this is the ongoing joke between us. There's Lucy White, Lucy Brown, and we're looking for the next Lucy Black, but we haven't seen her yet.
I know. Well, that's fascinating. I suppose
Lucy Brown is also blonde, so Lucy Black will have to be blonde as well. That's just how it is.
Okay, well, if you're called Lucy Black out there, then perhaps you would consider becoming a sort of alt-right media influencer sort of person. You could just do that, and it would make things a lot easier for all of us if there was a collection of Lucys of different colours. Not unlike... did you have, Paul, when you learned to read at school, The Village with Three Corners?
No.
Roger Red Hat, Billy Blue Hat, Naughty Percy Green Hat, Jenny and Jolly Yellow Hat.
We had childhood books like Where Are My Hubcaps?
Yes. I suppose you do, and things to do with the priest and stuff like that. Yeah. Good. Where was I? So get away, subscribe, all that malarkey. So we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn, and he has written the following poem. Somewhere. Where the hell is it? Here we are. In light of today's events. This evening we talked to Miss White. She's always a charming delight. Tonight's conversation on retaking the nation, it's surely an Englishman's right. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. Hey. And if you That's like it. Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should do, then you can buy his book of Jolly Heretic Poetry on Amazon and also subscribe. I think he has a YouTube channel, Resident Poet at Jolly Heretic, so subscribe there. And follow him on Twitter. There was something else I had to do. Oh, yes. We have two super chats so far. The first is from Sigurd J4K for 10 Swedish, 10 Swiss francs. And he says, our struggle is EFFNIC. Oh, sorry, ethnic. Our struggle is ethnic. Yes, indeed. Thank you, sir. And then at PlankBall348 says, is Lucy single? Can Ed arrange a date for us? I've no idea if Lucy is single, and I've no idea who you are, but perhaps get in touch with her on Twitter. And
I've learned one thing is you never discuss anything private or personal on TV, because I've had friends that have done that and it's gone horribly wrong for them.
What have they discussed and what went wrong?
Oh, just all sorts. I just could even be something to do with who they liked or something about their job, and then their job got emails about it, or it just always creates a social awkwardness or a mess that they can't then untangle because it's been put onto live TV or websites
or they've made something up, they've exaggerated.
Yeah, some of these people are just really gossipy. I try to stay away from that, but yeah, no, you know, so there are, I feel like Alex Phillips on Talk TV, she's quite a gossiper. She quite, you know, she likes to moan about everyone. But
so do you think that our friend Jess Phillips dealt with it well by just announcing she was pregnant and putting a picture of the fetus on TV?
Oh, that's Jess Gill?
Sorry, Jess Gill. Yes, Jess Gill.
Oh, yeah, she's actually a friend of mine.
Well, Jess Gill is always pregnant, Jess Phillips?
No,
Jess Gill. Jess Gill.
No, Jess Gill, yes.
Jess Gill, so, but isn't she a conservative? Is she married?
So I've known Jess I've known about Jess's pregnancy for a while, and so I'm glad that she's I think Jess is, everyone in her circles knew about it, and I think it's got to a stage where this is my inference. I suspect that if she hadn't posted it herself, someone else would have done it. So I think she just wanted to do it herself.
She must be at least 3 months pregnant, because otherwise she wouldn't have had the ultrasound.
Definitely not Jess Phillips. We don't like that lady.
She's, I don't even know who that is. Oh yeah, her. God, sorry, I confused the two. I'm sorry, Jess. If you're watching. Okay, Adrian the R says a super chat. Thank you, sir. £10. Even if foreigners fully integrate culturally, could extensive racial mixing eventually lead to a natural tendency towards a division a few generations down the line, as seen in places like Central Asia? Yes, but that mixture happened at a specific point in a civilizational cycle, didn't it? I mean, I don't know the details, but it's almost like Uzbekistan, which is a climb between West Asians and East Asians. Then that happens at a specific point in the civilizational cycle, and then they become isolated, and then you end up with a separate climb. So that's happening, actually. I mean, you've got the rise, of course, of the Hapas. So here we are in the sort of autumn to winter of civilization. We have a civilizational contact. We have two races that have been created, at least two, by this situation in our civilization. There's the Hapas, there's the Hispanics, there's the Rahab Basta. There's a number of races have been created due to us getting into the autumn of civilization and there being racial contact.
Are you ever been aware of any, are you familiar with the research on linguistics and immigration?
Probably vaguely. Certainly you can see it in Afrikaans, can't you? Really, really
well,
clearly.
No, I'm just thinking, for example, that I think one of the most ethnically pure societies on earth are the Basques, and that seems to coincide with the difficulty of, I think, is it Euskera, the language? Whereas I think this is one of the things I just think it makes it very, very difficult to control immigration in the UK, is the fact that we have this international language. In that sense, we're at a disadvantage.
Yes, I think that is true. That is a serious problem. And then you're protected from it until you become good enough at the international language. And then when you do, you're in trouble. So one of the things that's happened in Finland in the time that I've been here, 21 years. 21 years ago, if you went up to a random person in the street, they wouldn't speak English. You had to know Finnish. And it was impossible. You couldn't. The idea of having like people that don't speak Finnish working at Helsinki Airport in restaurants, that was insane. It was impossible.
Well, Ed, as you know, one of my big viral blow-ups was actually almost a year ago now, Heathrow Airport, where I complained two viral tweets about how, you know, the workers at Heathrow Airport are pretty much all Indian and were only speaking in their local languages. So, unfortunately, that's still a lived reality today.
But they could at least probably speak English.
But the issue is because they're all Indians, they just speak among themselves in Indian, so it's very dystopian. You walk around Heathrow Airport and all you can hear is their, I don't know, Hindi or Urdu or whatever language.
Yeah, I've experienced the same thing, but fortunately I can speak basic Urdu.
they should speak like that at home, so when you're at work, exactly. Just speak in English.
Exactly, bravo. You speak, if you're being paid in a public facing role, you should always speak English. If you're working in, say, as the Indians love to work, in tech companies, and if that's out of the public eye, okay, but when you're on a public facing, whether it's Marks and Spencer's, Tesco, Heathrow Airport, you should always, it's just very disrespectful not to speak the language.
Even 20 years, even 20, what was it, 23, 4, 5, 23 years ago when I was living in the Netherlands and I would make a point of speaking in Dutch, I went into a music shop in Delft in Holland, and the guy didn't speak Dutch. I couldn't, and he put me on to his boss and said, my boss can speak Dutch. But this was Finland was isolated from this. Their English just wasn't good enough. Finland learnt German. German was the language you learnt here, not if you wanted to. I remember actually meeting a woman in a park when I was with my daughter there, and my daughter's about two, so about 2011. And this woman was, I think she said she was in her early 90s. and we were talking in Finnish, and she wanted to stress that she could speak German. She said, oh, yeah, my headmaster at school was really pro-Germany and pro-Hitler. And so he made sure we learned German. And this has switched. And now it's the same thing happening here, that you can come here and you can get a job in a bar, for example, and not speak Finnish. And there's restaurants here that the people, there's a Nepalese restaurant here. It's my favorite restaurant in the world. It's brilliant. But they don't speak Finnish. You must speak English to them.
I know you never do, but could you do some homework for me on the genetic purity of Basques?
Sure. My understanding is that they are, you're right, they are surrounded, it's a mountainous area of Spain.
No, I just think it's an interesting test case. I've just been looking, people like Carlo in the comments. No, they're saying that the Basques aren't uniquely ethnically homogenous, and they've been infiltrated by the Spanish since the 1850s. And I think genetically, my understanding is, I might be wrong, I'll apologise if I am, but the Basques are the single most genetically homogenous group in the whole of Europe.
So I used to live in the Basque country for about 2 months, but I've had a very international life, and that's why it's funny how I'm now, you know, well, I think that shapes why I want England for the English, because of my lived experience.
You've met all these foreigners and they're awful.
No, well, I actually speak fluent Spanish, and when I was living in the Basque country, El País Basque, their entire language is pretty different. All I can remember off the top of my head is Eskerrik Asko is thank you, and Mercedes is please. That's about it.
But interestingly, they define Basqueness by the ability to speak Basque. You don't ever have to have been born in the Basque region, but because it's such a difficult language, if you speak Basque, you earn the right to be called Basque.
Yeah, the Basque country is amazing. I just remember when I was there, I was staying with a local Basque family, and the father was going on about independence, you know, for the Basque country. They wanted to separate from Spain. They said that they dominated economic growth in Spain, and without them,
right,
Spain's economy would crumble.
Aita is father in Basque.
Whose father?
Aita is father. It means father, which is Finnish for fence.
The fence, the gatekeeper, he's got a fence.
Finnish for mother is Aiti, and it has been suggested by weird linguists that Basque is distantly related to Finnish.
Yeah, it's but they can't find any. It pretty much is the most unique language probably there is. They can't find many links.
The grammar, as I understand it, the grammar system is the same in Basque as in Finnish. And also the same in like Korean and Japanese and things like this.
But anyway, Ed, could you do that research?
Because I will have a look.
The language connection is really interesting.
It does. I've been to the Basque country many times. I used to go on holiday in Asturias when I was a child, as a teenager, with my parents, and we would pass through the Basque country through San Sebastian. And we went to that. My parents both art teachers, and we went to that art gallery in Bilbao.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it had that kind of Northern Ireland feel, you know, police with guns. There was even a march, a pro-ETA was the group, ETA, a pro-ETA march while I was there. ETA was the terrorist group that used to
bomb. Can I just, this is frustrating. All Mouth No Trousers is saying that the Basque country is heterogeneous and it's mixed. I'm talking about the genetics, not the fact that the Basque country can't close itself off with iron walls. Yes, I accept that. Ethnically, genetically, this is your bailiwick, Ed. My understanding is, just to repeat to the idiots in the comments yet again, it's ethnically and genetically they are probably the purest ethnic group in Europe. For what that's worth, I'm just interested in the links to language.
The language, it is, I mean, it is amazing. I did once briefly, you know, those language learning books you can get, you know, Teach Yourself, whatever, or Colloquial, whatever, isn't it? That's what these language learning books by Routledge. I did once pick up and think about starting Teach Yourself Basque, but it was just too complicated. Yes, Liv.
My turn, Ed. Paul is right about the Basque people. Well, I did not pronounce it properly, but yes, he is indeed right.
Is he?
Yes, he is right.
So genetically, they
have been, let me not use the term isolated, but it's a continuous civilization. So in that sense, they have not had much mixture from elsewhere.
This is the one time I'm actually rooting for your cultural Darwinism.
Yeah, no, I've just had a look, and you're right. So they're basically. Can you shut up so I can tell Paul that he's right? Sorry, I do beg your pardon. Black privilege and all that. I apologise.
But, we can't see Lipton. He's just like a flashing disco light on the screen.
He is. No, they are. You're correct about that. And so they are an isolate. They are what would you call it? A little enclave of hunter-gatherer, of European hunter-gatherer DNA. That is what they are, with almost no mixture from the Anatolian farmers, let alone the Indo-Europeans.
Right. So they are just thinking. This is the problem with chat. Someone said you shouldn't have a go at people in the comments, but when you actually know something, and I don't do a lot of science, but when you actually know something as a scientific fact, and you get people, you know, flat earthers denying the scientific facts, it's quite frustrating. So I actually got some bit of sympathy for you, Ed, from your scientific background when people dispute the basic science.
I know. And my scientific background is entirely self-taught. But yeah, this is quite annoying. It's like a debates I've had with people about vaccines. But anyway, let's move on. Okay, we have a super chat from somebody. Where is it? James Ogden says $9.99 and nothing. Thank you very much, sir. That's very kind of you. I'd like to move on then, Lucy, to the next issue. We've talked about Henry Novak, who was stabbed, which is by the sea. We've talked about the march. And so the next issue I'd like to discuss is this whole... you're into this whole Restore party, aren't you? Restore.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Mm.
So, and why... Like, I always ask these people the same question, but isn't it going to just make things easier for Labour if there's two political parties that are way to their right, that are competing for Brexit, working-class white people sort of votes?
No, absolutely not, because the first thing to understand is Reform is not a right-wing party. No right-wing party would fill the party with Muslims and foreigners and ex-Tory ministers. So you've got Zia Yusuf and Leila Cunningham, one from Egypt, one from Sri Lanka. I don't see that as any different, say, from the Sadiq Khan is a Muslim mayor from Pakistan. Reform want to replace him with a Muslim mayor from Egypt. You have Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood from Pakistan. Reform want to replace her with a Home Secretary, Zia Yusuf, Muslim from Sri Lanka. And then you have the fact that we had a lot of foreign candidates, even foreign-born ones, from the Boris wave, even here on student visas, that were put up in the local elections. I think that's purely insane. You can't advocate to reverse.
Lucy, can I ask you a quick question?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Zia Yusuf? Is that his correct name?
Mohammed Ziauddin Yusuf.
Right. If you had him in charge, just say he was prime minister, do you think he'd do less or more harm on the immigration front than Boris Johnson, one of the whitest people in the history of humankind, did during the Boris wave?
Yeah, well, I think he would. I think it's impossible to do as much harm as Boris. But the point
who's
is
whiter than white. So this idea that your race...
No, but the point is, as native Brits, we don't want to be ruled by foreigners. So there shouldn't be any foreigners in politics. If I had my way, I'd go back to 1701.
I understand that, but apart
he was 25%, he was 25% Turkish, though, and his real surname was Kemal.
Yeah, but the way he looked, he's blonder than blonde. My point is, apart from just outright racism, what is the reason for not wanting anyone who isn't whiter than white like Boris Johnson?
Because it's nothing to do with race, and I don't care if you call me a racist. I couldn't care less, to be honest.
I didn't call you a racist. Well, I'm asking for. No, I asked for reason. No, did I call you racist? I asked for reasons other than racism as to why it's more important that someone like Boris Johnson is white than he actually was responsible for the Boris wave of immigration.
Because what? So also, you have to understand in Boris's cabinet, he had Priti Patel, his Home Secretary, who was an Indian. And they flooded the country with Indians as well. So I'm talking about an entirely native British cabinet. I don't think any country should be ruled by foreigners.
I suppose it's a feeling, Paul, isn't it? It's like Rose West is a horrible person, but she's one of us. So we're kind of responsible for her.
I'm not taking a side. I'm just pointing out you can have a pure white cabinet and, ironically, the biggest percentage of immigration in living memory. Or you could have an ethnically mixed cabinet who had a much stricter approach to immigration.
We didn't have that, though, did we?
I'm just giving you an example. It could be the case that. Labour Party, Mahmood seems to be the one most in favour of strict immigration controls. So in terms of actual outcomes, do you want an ethnically homogenous cabinet that allows millions and millions of immigrants from all around the world in? Or do you want an ethnically diverse cabinet with stricter immigration rules?
I want neither, and that's why I'm going to go... Well, I'm not saying Restore will only do that, but I believe that Restore is the only party that will put the British people first. And that's back to Ed's question, that's why I'm supporting Restore. Because when Nigel brought in Nadeem Zahawi, for a lot of people, that led to them to defect away from Reform. To bring in Tory ministers that have... For example, Robert Jemrick, who is a native English, he flooded Afghans into our country, and therefore I can't trust him as a native Englishman to reverse migration. But whereas Rupert Lowe has actually said that they will not only look at stopping immigration, but they will reverse it, including legal migration. And whether or not, in one term of government, you cannot possibly deport everyone, but by starting at least with a plan to deport the illegal migrants and the legal ones that have caused us harm. So Rupert is talking about Pakistani rape gangs and those that knew about it, or the ones that don't assimilate into our society that have parallel, they literally live in parallel universes to us, but in our country. Rupert's talking about stopping the benefits of foreigners that don't work. Why should 71% of the Somalians here live on social housing? And so exactly. And so Rupert has never said, my aim is, for example, was Lucy White in my own capacity will say, I only want to be ruled by natives. Rupert hasn't said that, but his policies are what draws me to Restore Britain.
Right. So Lucy, given that there is a real phenomenon of suicidally empathetic Zoomers and young people, and there are a large, massive percentage of those are white. So what I'm still not clear on, if you have an indigenous white population, many of whom are suicidally empathetic and would create absolute havoc for this country if they got anywhere near power, it's not clear to me the causal relationship between ethnicity all the time and actual outcomes.
Well, I don't know exactly what your question is, but just going back to Ed's...
Well, you could have a purely white, suicidally empathetic cabinet.
He's saying, like, from a practical perspective, wouldn't it be better to have, basically a cabinet full of Liptons, right? Or than a cabinet full of native English people who are bastard traitors?
Want to stop the tap. So whichever one is going to stop migration and reverse it.
Lucy, I want to cut welfare for immigrants. No immigrant should get welfare. I don't care if you're legal or illegal. I'm serious.
In Lucy's world, you're not allowed in.
But going back to Ed's original question of Restore versus Reform, the point is Restore Britain will be able to galvanise votes from those who are disillusioned by politics and have never voted before. I know someone that... the only time in her life she ever voted was for Brexit and has never voted before or since and will be voting for Restore Britain. So it's not a competition of, it's not even a matter of splitting the right, because number one, Reform is not even a right-wing party. The fact, even let's just say hypothetically for this scenario, Reform was a right-wing party. There's nothing stopping Restore Britain standing as its own party. The Restore is the real deal. It's offering what Reform promised it would be, and it backtracked massively. So Restore is the official anti-establishment party. And so why not give voters a choice? I don't believe
I agree. I just think I kind of between you and Paul, really. I think there just needs to be you get this thing virtue signalling on the left, right? And it's very annoying. But you do get purity signalling on the right. I'm not saying your purity signal is, but I'm saying it's something that you do get. And I think there needs to be a sort of a realpolitik thing. Okay, you're not going to deport, and there isn't the will to, and nobody want people. A lot of people don't want this. All non-English people from England. That's not going to happen. So I think there needs to be a realistic policy. I would personally argue, if you've come to the country since the 2nd of May 1997, unless you've married a British person, you go, you leave. And I see that as a completely reasonable policy. And then I've got an idea. I can see there's going to be borderline cases, okay? So as I've said before, what we should do is, when I was in the first year at junior school and we were moving into the second year, they decided that they would mix up the classes. So up to that point, the classes were like, were you born September to December or December to January to April or whatever? Mixed them up. And we all got to nominate two friends that could come into the new class, that they try and make it that if in the new mixed up class would be in the class with us, right? So my idea is we all get to nominate two foreigners that can stay. And that's a brilliant idea, because the foreigners that can stay will have integrated, won't they? They'll have British friends and stuff. So they'll be fine. Sorry, Lipton.
Now, I was just about to tell Lucy that I am serious about immigration reform. If you migrate to any country, you should fend for yourself indefinitely. You should not benefit from welfare. And I want to cut welfare for immigrants. I don't care if they're legal or illegal.
Lipton, if we migrated, the three of us, to Jamaica, then what would be the things that we'd have trouble integrating with? And Jamaican nationalists would say, oh, these people don't integrate, man. They just come here.
No. Well, you're white and you're European. So if you were to migrate to Jamaica, you would reside in an... Let me continue. If you were to migrate to Jamaica, you would reside in an upscale community. And it's unlikely that locals would know you or be your friend. You would just live in an upscale community. That's all. And eat
out. If I wanted to integrate, then what would I have to do?
Why would you want to integrate with Jamaicans?
Because I moved to your country and I want to integrate. So what would me and Lucy and Paul have to do to integrate?
You could become a bit abrasive. You could not take time seriously. You could slack off at work.
Okay, cool.
You could
become
overly promiscuous.
Okay.
Superstitious.
Superstitious. Good. There was that whole Kentucky Fried Chicken problem, wasn't there?
Yes. They were fighting for it. This is my salad now. Can't do the salad.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So that's what we'd have to do to integrate. Okay. There's a question from, it says, Paul, are you able to ask Lucy for me about her views on Jewish integration in the UK and whether she thinks they should leave? And that is from James Ogden.
Well, I've never spoken about the Jewish community. My main focus is on those from Africa and sort of South Asia. So I think in terms of numbers, if you look at my work and my policies, I've only ever spoken about the African continent and sort of, subcontinent of India. So, India, Pakistan, some of Sri Lanka, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, for example, I think those are the problematic people. I think they're coming here in large numbers. I do think that, the Jewish question is its own separate thing, which I'm not going to get in right now, but what I can tell you, and you can infer this as you will, is that I've never spoken that I've never sort of called them up in any of my policies.
I don't like the kosher slaughter.
So for example, I can talk to you on kosher slaughter because that's one of the projects I'm actually working on at the moment. The issue with kosher is that, yes, while 0.5% of the population is Jewish, the Jewish community, 100% of kosher meat has to be non-stun. There's no stunning at all, which I disagree with in terms of the animal welfare aspect. The problem with that is while the Jewish people will claim that only the Jews eat kosher, that's not strictly true because the hind ends or the rear quarter of the animal is rejected by the Jewish community kosher meat mark and that it gets fed into the traditional meat market. So people without their knowledge or consent might be eating kosher meat because it's been rejected by the kosher market. As I say, the hind end or the rear quarter enters into the main meat market. And so they'll be eating animals which have not been pre-stunned. And that would go against their moral beliefs. So there is an issue with kosher, yes.
Yeah, but I don't feel as strongly as our friend that was on here last week, Catherine Blakelock, about this. I think I agree with that Richard Herring sketch where he said, I won't eat anything that is more intelligent than me. And I stick with that. I won't eat anything that is more intelligent than me. And
does that mean 50% of the people in the comments are vegetarian?
I hope so, but I wouldn't eat them. I'd like to try. I had a friend, a chap took me for coffee once in Oulu because he was a fan of the Jolly Heretic, and he had a Korean wife and he was on his honeymoon, and he'd eaten cat. And I would try it. I know I've got two cats and I love one of them dearly.
Well, Ed, have you spent much time in Manchester?
I've been to Manchester, was it, four times. On every occasion when I got off the train, I was offered drugs almost immediately.
No, I was just going to say, because I lived in South Manchester for quite a while, and there were no stray cats in our area, lots of Chinese restaurants, and I'm pretty sure I ate cat at some point.
Isn't South Manchester the posh bit? That's like Cheshire, isn't
it? No, it's Didsbury. It can be. There's Didsbury. I lived in Northenden, and then you had Withenshaw.
Altrincham.
Yeah, no, there's a patchwork. So Northenden was a poor person's Didsbury, or it was a rich person's Withenshaw. So Northenden, now it's actually improved since, it won't be a coincidence, but since I left, I think it improved a lot.
So did you work at Manchester University?
No, I was at Salford for a while, and then when I went to Leeds, I stayed in Manchester. I didn't move to Leeds. I like Manchester. It was really good.
Excellent. Now, where were we? Now, the final thing. We'll go on to this. Lucy, do you think that Andy Burnham is going to lose his attempt to be a by-elected prime minister?
That's a great point. So I think is it Makerfield or Macafield? I'm not a northerner, so I don't know how to pronounce that.
Makerfield.
Makerfield. Okay. I think that, I think in general, the British public have had enough of the Labour Party and they won't vote for him just to send a signal about the direction of the country. I do genuinely believe that Restore Britain have a heck of a chance of winning. And I'm not just saying that because I support them. I do believe that this is a new party and people want a new, they just want change. And so I think, yeah, sure, Andy Burnham is someone who we know that if he's elected, he will then run in the leadership contest to become prime minister. But I think, as I say, generally, I don't see why the people of Makerfield would want to show any support for the Labour Party, given the current state of affairs. And yes, it could lead to someone like Wes Streeting, or as Ed has in his name, Big Ange for PM. But there you go. I think one way or another, we're not going to get rid of Labour until 2029, unless there is a snap election. So I think
Big Ange is the prime minister that the UK, spelt with a Y, deserves. UK.
Well, yes, I believe that. I do believe that we need to essentially see the last of what the Labour Party has to offer for us, because I don't see how after this awful, if I can say it, shit show, I don't see how they're going to be elected back in anyone's living memory. I just don't see it happening. I do believe Restore Britain can do it. I believe they've got a great candidate, Rebecca Shepherd. She's actually a local, genuine businesswoman from the area, whereas Andy Burnham is a failed career politician. So let's let the people of Makerfield decide. But I'm pretty sure that Andy Burnham is a good buy.
Also, Andy Burnham goes jogging.
I saw the t-shirts of him running. Yeah, I wasn't hoping to see those, but they just popped up on my timeline, unfortunately, while I was having coffee this morning.
Dignified, isn't it?
Ed, you've got that picture as your screensaver now, haven't you?
I haven't actually.
Yes, no, you have.
I haven't. I've got that. I've got that. I've got that AI picture you sent to me of Lucy as my screensaver. He goes jogging for publicity and jogging. I didn't like that. Got quite a good amount of hair on his legs for his age, because of course you lose hair on your legs as you get older. So he's doing quite well on that score. But I mean, maybe that was what it was about. He wanted to show off the fact that he had a large amount of hair on his legs for a man in his late 40s or early 50s or however old he is. I have no idea. I think he might well lose, but I do think he will lose Lucy to reform rather than to restore Britain. I think that's the it's a sign of diabetes. What, to lose your leg on your hair? No, it isn't. It's just age. That's rubbish.
You know, of course, you can't compare Gorton and Denton to Makerfield. Very different demographics as well. But yeah, I just personally think people have seen through. Reform have let the mask slip, and I think we've seen that they're just quite, they seem quite nasty, to be honest. Just, I don't think.
Well, all they had to do was not try and ruin Rupert's life, and they just had to not do that.
So, can I just clarify something? A political party is being nasty, and that's a problem in politics. How?
Because when you go around trying to, you know, pretend to say Rupert Lowe has dementia or get him arrested on false accusations, that is a new level of politics, which I personally haven't been made aware of before. I think politics in itself and inherently is a toxic career, a toxic field.
Charles Kennedy was basically booted out of Scottish politics. They preyed on his, the SNP preyed on his alcoholism. I could give you loads of examples. Politics is a horrible, horrible activity.
Well, that's my personal opinion. I think a lot of people had faith in the Reform Party, and I think they've let a lot of people down. And so, you know, like I say, let's see what happens on the 18th.
Lucy, I live in the UK. I'm here. I'm here legally, not illegally. I like the UK. I resent the decline of the British Empire. And I think that I should go into politics along with Ed. Ed should be the Prime Minister, and that would be the Minister of Deportation. And I'm serious.
Yeah, he would be very good at that. He would
yeah, no, I'm sending him back, everybody. Let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to look at the percentage of immigrants who are living in social housing, and then if the percentage is quite high, I'm going to impose a quota on people coming from those countries. And I'm serious. All of you are going home.
Paul, don't feed the trolls. I can see what you're doing.
No, but Ed, I've had a real revelation.
Paul, Lipton. The people who listen to Ed, they don't like you. They think that you are they're anti-Semitic. They think that that you are a Jew. They don't like you.
No. I know Lipton because they don't know the difference between being a Zionist and, you know, various other forms of insults they throw at people. But no, it was fascinating because Ed and I have had various disagreements, but I think Ed would accept that when we discuss science, it's quite nuanced and it's about the founding assumptions. It's
Paul
about methodology.
Paul is poorly informed.
Lipton,
somebody
wait a second.
Said, I like Carlo.
No, but
I
Lipton,
like Carlo. Carlo follows me on
Carlo's
YouTube.
An idiot. Carlo was the one who I've been patiently trying to explain in the comments the difference between immigration.
I like Carlo. Carlo has been
Lipton.
Following me for like 5 years.
Yeah, Lipton, I'd be worried because I'm trying to explain to him what genetics are. And it's not often that Ed and I agree, but I understand what genetics are and they can be measured. DNA can be traced. And all Carlo keeps saying is non-Basque people live in the Basque country. Well, I'm shocked. I never knew that. I was trying to explain the ethnic purity of the Basques, which is a scientific fact.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if the majority of people in the Basque country are non-Basque.
Exactly. Well, Carlo's got excited about that because he struggles to understand what genetic consistency means as opposed to who lives in a particular country.
If you're asking a question, another question about Jews to Lucy, can Lucy not acknowledge that not all immigrants are the same and that Jews can integrate? Rupert has publicly said that. Can Lucy give her opinion? Can you give an opinion on Lucy on that immigrants integrate differently or something?
Yeah, well, obviously. I've lived in Spain. I've lived in France. I've lived in other countries as well, even in Africa. I do believe naturally immigrants from the Anglosphere are the most likely to integrate into the UK because our fellow Americans, Australians, New Zealanders and Canadians the real Canadians, not the recent arrival of Indians, of course. The Anglosphere, we are essentially one. We are one people. If they do a DNA test, they're probably very likely to have British DNA. So, of course, those immigrants are our brothers and sisters. And then you have our European neighbours who are then very much very likely to integrate into Great Britain because, again, yet there are European neighbours. They are of genetic proximity to us. We have a shared history somewhat, and they cause no problems. Whereas I think third world immigration for me is a problem in the sense that I see them having extremely different cultures that are incompatible to us. You might get the odd one, two or three, you know, individuals that of course integrate better than those en masses. And again, within the third world, you even have those who are elitists and those who are here on the boat. So it's a very big difference. You know, I've met, it could be an African who's an elite African who went to boarding school in somewhere like Sweden or Switzerland or Great Britain. So it's very different. You know, third world immigration typically won't integrate as well as European or Anglosphere, obviously. But then again, within the third world, if you're an elitist compared to a village goat herder, you're not going to integrate as well. So
I think if you want to integrate, you have to eat pork and beef. It's very important.
Lucy? Can you hear me, Lucy?
I can hear you. I can't see you, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm speaking to Lucy.
Yeah, you're going to chat up.
The chat yes. up begins.
There's this professor. He's my favorite writer. His name is George Oosterdijk. You should look him up.
What's his name? Sorry, George.
George Oosterdijk. He's German. And this thesis is quite simple. There are many people in developing countries who are at a lower stage of psychosocial development. They're pre-modern people.
They are. We don't need that. Right. Okay. I'd like to wrap up now. I'd like to thank Lucy for coming on. It's been very enlightening and interesting.
Someone just said, let's replace Lucy with Paul, which I don't think they realise. English may not be their first language. It's the opposite of what they intend to say.
Oh, they meant Paul with Lucy. I didn't know what... Oh, but I'm not on the show regularly, so...
No. It's Lucy just fascinating. Even when they're agreeing with you, they're betraying their inability to communicate in English.
They just want two Pauls, which would be an interesting idea.
Which would be great, yeah.
They would be just double Paul. I don't know how that would work. It would be like having twins, I suppose, but twins that had exactly the same environmental experiences.
Well, perhaps Paul could just log in on his laptop and his phone and have two screens, just his face at different angles.
And debate himself.
Lucy, Paul has the highest IQ on this show.
I don't know about that. Ed's got a pretty high IQ as well.
No, you can't compare Ed to Paul.
I agree, Lipton.
No.
Yeah.
Paul is really smart.
Remember, Paul gave Paul that
20 pounds once.
That 20 quid a year ago has bought a lot, hasn't it, Lipton? That's bought a lot when he gave that 20 quid in Liverpool. It's the best
20 quid I've ever spent, Ed.
God, he meant so much to him, that 20 quid. I'd like to thank Lucy for coming on, and so remember to subscribe to Lucy on Twitter if you're on. Another question, Ed. Ed, you are the best human ever, says I can't see who says this, hang on. They're right, obviously, but I can't see. James Ogden. Thank you, Mr. Ogden. I don't know about that. Surely it's Paul. Paul is so smart. He's so smart. Yes, that Lipton is well.
I think we should all do an IQ test and compare who has the highest IQ.
Okay, well, so I don't care what you say if you're an IQ tester. If they do a verbal IQ, one of the hardest words that they put on it that they don't expect anyone to know what it is sedulous.
I know sedulous. I've seen that term before.
Shut up. Paul, do you know what that means?
Sedulous.
Yes.
I don't think I do know. I was going to say, I was going to confuse it. Credulous.
Do you know what surgeon just means?
No.
Diligent. Diligent. Yes, I see it all the time.
I discovered that word reading a book called Wolf Solent by John Llewellyn somebody or other many years ago and had to look it up. So that's one of the words they use as a marker of, you know, sort of very high verbal. Only verbal, though, because it's mathematical and spatial as well. That's one of the ones they use. Anyway, all right, so summing up. So I'd like to thank Lipton, Lucy and Paul. We've all been very sedulous this evening, I think you can agree, and produced an excellent show. And tally-ho, chaps, and we'll see you all next week. And goodbye!
Goodbye!